Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, podcast time.
Let's do this.
Okay.
How are we, Tim?
I'm okay. I'm in the Egg Chasers TMO shipping container. Been called into active duty in the shipping container, so I'm from London today.
Very nice. Have you been working this weekend?
Bath.
You were Bath?
Sorry. Yeah, it was Bath.
Bath
the Bath Northampton game on Friday night, yeah.
Any good?
It was a great game.
I didn't see it. I've been in Berlin.
Show off.
Yeah, kind of a big deal.
Big weekend for German rugby.
Huge weekend for German rugby. I go to Berlin once and Germany beat Romania. Have you actually seen the game?
No.
Oh, it's a really good game as well. Really good game. Actually, shall we talk about this during the pod?
Yes.
Well, let's only talk about that, and because there's not really any other rugby of note to talk about. So get ready, everyone, for a 1-hour breakdown of Germany's victory over Romania.
That's right. So metaphorical hands in on three. One, two, three. Pod. Hello, and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm JB, filling in for Tim, who is in the shipping container. Hello again, Tim.
Hello, JB.
And of course, there is Phil. Hello, Phil.
Hello, JB.
You can find us on Twitter at Rugby Podcast, and you can also leave us a review on iTunes. Do we have a review this weekend, Tim?
We certainly do. G-Man got in touch and said, 5 stars. A
Cheers.
Rugby podcast that isn't just ex-players giving their standard rugby chat. Great crack and lots of genuine laughs. English rugby heavy at times and lots of gushing about the Avicii Premiership, but you just can't beat it for quality debate, foresight and analysis. Keep it up, boys. Let the boys play. I'm thinking the foresight he's talking about is Ben Teo will never make an international rugby player. Your foresight, JB. I think
my foresight was there. Tim Swinson's going to make the Lions. That's my foresight. Hear me now, believe me later.
And Ian in Cape Town says, this podcast forms the cornerstone
nice.
Of his commute each Monday in Cape Town as he dodges Springbok war criminals. He says, more entertaining than replica podcasts. And he's spelt more wrong, though. And maybe it's a South African thing. He spelt it M-O-O-R-E. Anyway.
Interesting.
He says, whilst more consistent than even Sale with ball in hand. So thank you very much. Leave your reviews on iTunes. We are the original rugby podcast, 52 weeks a year. And remember, imitation is the greatest form of flattery.
Of
we are blushing.
Of course.
We're always here for you, talking rugby.
Where do you want to start then, boys? Do you want to get straight into Romania, Germany?
Well, you were on a... Was it a stag do you were on this weekend?
Yes. Oh, yes. I went to Berlin Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Honestly, mate, Berlin, I'm not entirely sure why we didn't just give it to the Russians. Not impressed. So it is like being in the most depressing part of all the Bourne films. Like, it's just... You've been, yeah?
I've been to Berlin about 4 or 5 years ago. So I found it took... I was there for 3 days as well.
Mm-hmm.
It took me 2 days just to kind of understand where I roughly needed to be.
Yeah.
And then when I understood where I needed to be, I thought it was brilliant. But it was just enormous, and I just remember getting taxis all around and no one could really tell me where were the best places to go.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had a list from Time Out. Never trust bloggers.
Those Time Out lists are
nonsense. Oh my
God,
garbage. So we drove 23 minutes into the middle of nowhere. Like, a horrible built-up area. And the bars that they had selected were all closed. All closed down. We then travelled back. And this is how seriously I take rugby podcasting. So that seriously, that I went home for the Ireland-Italy game.
Went back to the hotel.
Went back to the hotel, had a sleep, so I could watch England versus Wales fully focused. How do you like that?
Well, let's start, as you were fully focused for it, let's start there. Well, obviously on this podcast, it's been an immense Six Nations tournament. It is the most wonderful time of the year, as we've already established. But I think no one would begrudge, as you being a Welshman, me and Phil being Englishmen, but I'm sure even neutrals or fans of Ireland, France, Italy, and have I missed a team out?
Scotland
wouldn't begrudge us starting with England Wales. What a match!
Wow, I mean, it's just awesome. It was just absolutely awesome. What I have noticed, like, Wales have just got a core of players who kind of border on arrogant. I think they're like chippy, arrogant, but they're really good. They are really good. And the guys I'm talking about, Reece Webb, who I thought was really, really solid, and I thought Dan Bigger was exceptional.
Those two were exceptional. Alan Wynne-Jones, Liam Williams were also outstanding. Yep.
Ross Moriarty.
The back row, yeah. Oh. Yeah, the back row as a unit. Moriarty, Tipperick, Warburton. And their dominance at the breakdown.
Mm.
Was it 8-1 or 8-2 in that game to in favour of Wales?
I think it was the 2 because of that Sinclair one at the end.
Yeah.
Well, the little T-Rex arms got in there.
Yeah.
I'm sure that he was off his feet for that. Sure of it. I thought that was penalty Wales.
It was touch and go.
But it's weird you mention the breakdown and the and the turnovers, because when you watch it, you don't immediately think that Wales are the ones winning the breakdown battle. In fact, quite the opposite. I thought the England ball was so quick, particularly for the first 10 minutes. Wales made a couple of big turnovers. But in general play, I thought Wales were really on the rack for large periods of time.
Oh, it's interesting you get that perception as a Welshman, because I almost have the exact opposite. I thought England had a good 10-15 minute period at the start of the first half, and then towards the end they came good. But besides that, it felt like it was all Wales.
Yeah.
You talked about arrogance, JB. And I think I know what you mean.
It's
as
like a
in,
strut to them.
Yeah, they kind of turn it on when it kind of matters and sort of peacock around a little bit. I know what you're saying, but I would equally say that I think there's not enough arrogance with Wales, and that was perfectly illustrated for me by Rob Howley and Alan Wynne-Jones after the game, who were both talking about the pride and, you know, let's look at the positives and, we really pushed England hard there. And that is accurate, but I would want a captain. I would want Alan Wynne-Jones absolutely seething, barely able to speak if I were a Welsh fan, about the pain that he has for that loss. And I appreciate him being positive, but just mentality-wise, I just wonder if that's why they lost it. Because they're wired, maybe it's top-down, Rob Howley down, I don't know.
Well,
but they just seem to be wired where they were kind of satisfied with losing.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, if you just, like, you know, the names I mentioned previously, Webb, Bigger, Scott Williams, Liam Williams, they don't strike me as people that take losing particularly well.
But Alan Wynne-Jones, it was striking the words he used in that.
I didn't hear the interview.
In that full-time interview. And he was talking about how proud he was of the boys, how well they performed for 76 minutes. And it was astonishing to listen to a captain who's just lost in the last minute talking about those things rather than the devastation at that defeat. It was odd. It was an odd interview.
He could have said, having worked so hard and played so well, I can barely speak. I'm that disappointed. He could have still emphasised that they did well. But it should have been. But it's like that kind of winning mentality, and maybe that's why England won, is because they have that ruthlessness and that mentality that winning is everything.
Okay, well, can I throw a curveball at you then? Do you think that the passiveness of Alan Wynne-Jones's interview at the end was anything to do with this thing that Gatland has been saying, that Alan Wynne is too passionate to be a captain?
That seems to contradict what we've just seen.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was a knock on him. That's why he has captained Wales before, but Warburton has been the long-standing captain, and apparently the quote is, he's too passionate.
Well, I'll throw another little potential in there. Could Alan Wynne-Jones have been being like that, trying to emphasise the positives? Because in the back of his head, he was like, I didn't take the points. Why the hell did I not kick at sticks?
Yeah. Yeah, that wasn't his...
Echoes of Rob Shaw World Cup 2015, although this was Wales trying to establish more of a winning position, not just get a draw.
Yeah, I don't know really. I don't think that was too bad a decision. I mean, to be fair, they win this game. They win this game if Jonathan Davis basically puts the ball out and they can structure some sort of exit plan rather than kicking it to Elliot Daly and, you know, letting it all crumble around them.
There was a couple of things. There was that decision, which was odd for him to just to kick it kind of centre field. And there's the line out before that.
Well, the one which didn't function.
Yeah.
Weirdly.
After the bigger break and chip through where Daly brilliantly tracks back and kicks it out, it's Wales' own line out on England's 22.
Yeah.
And they had a brain freeze moment like England did last week, but they had it at a time that really, really mattered.
Yeah. It's interesting. Daly did so well again. I reckon we're going to see a transition for Daly now. I think they're going to move him to fullback.
I am also thinking exactly that. Yes.
And on top of that, I think they're going to move him to fullback. I think Mike Brown's days are done, though. Because what you'd always say with Mike Brown is beating the first defender. I think he got tackled by Rob Evans at one point as that first defender. So I think Mike Brown is declining. I think they're going to move Elliot Daly in there. And that opens up another wing space for someone. Rocco,
well, Watson, if he's on form, mate.
Bloody hell, yeah.
If we want a bit of a Forrest Gump-esque quality.
Too talented to be any good, mate. I've told you.
let's just put this in context. Would you say Wales lost that game? I don't know. What's your reaction, JB? Because you seem to be kind of... You're putting it down to a kick from Jonathan Davies.
Yeah, I just think it's very tight margins. England definitely deserved the win. I don't think there's any two ways about that, because they hung in there till the very end. So they put themselves in the position to win a one-score game, and that's exactly what they did. But international rugby, tight margins, you get the kick wrong. Cuthbert's on the field, he gets the kick chase slightly wrong. And, you know, back to Cuthbert, harder he tries, worse it gets. And it just seems to be over and over again. It's just these tight margins. So, yeah, it is the kick chase that lost it, as far as I'm concerned.
Just on the who lost it, or did Wales lose it, England win it? That try from England, it was not just Daly. So Ford takes the kick. He sets off at full pace. He throws a 30-yard pass to Owen Farrell, who sets off at full pace.
Yeah.
He throws another 30-yard pass to Daly.
Oh, an immense pass that was.
Yeah. Those two passes, in the 77th minute or 76th minute, to do that after playing such a physical game, because this was a brutal test match.
It was, wasn't it?
To perform at that highest level, and for Daly to go in at the corner, and then for Owen Farrell to slot the kick from the corner to mean a penalty would be no good to Wales, to mean they had to score a try, that was just brilliant.
Yeah.
That was kind of composure and finishing and skill set of the absolute highest order. So I don't think England played particularly well, but in that brief moment, they showed why they deserved to win it.
I'd love to know what would happen if you had Bigger and Farrell on the same team, because they are carbon copies of each other. I mean, Farrell's a better player. Farrell's the better, more talented player. I think Bigger is... He might even be a better game manager and a better big game player than Farrell.
I think what's happened in these first two rounds is if Warren Gatland was picking his tens for New Zealand, Ford is the one that's dropped down the rankings and he's going to miss out.
Yeah, completely agree.
And I actually think that is not Ford's fault. I actually think it's down to Ben Young's not giving him a good ball. Because what Ford needs, we've seen the difference from having Stringer providing him the fastest possible ball from the base of a ruck when they got to the final of the Premiership, to then a combination of Matawalu and Chris Cook giving the pick up and kind of shimmy and half go, and then giving Ford the ball,
yellow card,
man and ball at the same time. It's, he needs fast, crisp ball. So I just wonder, I was considering the changes that England could make, and I just.
But Danny Kerr's not the answer to that, though, is he?
Well, he can do it, but they need to change it. They do need someone who's going to give him that crisp ball, and then we'll really see how Ford can function.
Mm. Yeah,
but I agree. Based on these two performances, Ford has dropped down that 10
now,
ranking.
Let me ask you another question. A guy under a load of pressure this weekend was Rob Howley. How do you think that he did? What's his report card like?
There's a lot of positives for this.
There is.
On this Wales performance, a lot. Unfortunately, the biggest factor, the single biggest factor, is getting the win at home.
Yeah.
When you, with 5 minutes to go, you are leading. Mm. And he failed to do that.
Let's just take one thing that a lot of people have talked about. What I would firstly say, I think, in terms of the evolution of Wales that everyone except for JB was calling for years, months, years, I think you now would even have to accept, JB, that Wales have moved on and they are moving on and they needed to move
Funny
on.
Funny you should mention this, actually. Funny you should mention this, because maybe you would have had a point. But this game was not the evolution of Wales. This was not free-flowing rugby.
I think it was. No, they were offloading, which Wales never did.
Well, I was watching this game, I was thinking Jamie Roberts would actually make a huge... Not an impact, because he's not an impact player. He shouldn't be on the bench. But if he'd have started, I think he'd have been incredibly effective in this game. So, No, I don't think that... You know, I think this is a bad example.
Wales were showing a lot more attacking intent, which I think... To Rob Howley's credit, maybe some of the things are bedding in. It was interesting, after the game, Paul O'Connell said, the interesting thing as far as the Lions goes is Warren Gatland's game plan, which Wales seem to have moved away from. He said Warren Gatland's game plan is kind of good for a tour because any player can learn it in 3 days. Which he's got quite a funny reaction from the people around him. It sounded like a massive slam from Paul O'Connell. But basically his point was, it's just so Wales, the way Wales played and have played under Gatland is so simple. Yeah. And there was definitely a bit more subtlety from Wales, which I really enjoyed seeing. So that's to Howley's credit. But one thing a lot of Welsh fans have pointed out is, was Moriarty just a kind of going through the motions? Oh, I've planned to sub him on 50 minutes, so I'll take him off on 50 minutes.
I think that's
regardless
the case.
Of the fact he was having a massive impact on the game.
Oh, he was superb. And you know, another thing which you've got to credit Howley with is, I assume the game plan was to hit Nathan Hughes as hard and as often as you possibly could, two up at the expense of someone else.
Yeah, Moriarty. He could do with running a little bit lower sometimes. In fact, a lot of the England players could do with running lower.
Him, Laws, Launchbury, Haskell, they run so upright.
Yeah. Well, I have seen Hughes getting a lot of stick the last few hours, I guess, for not being good enough. I don't believe that is the case at all, actually. I just think he was the main focus of the Welsh defence.
Because he was the main focus of the English attack, because he was the carrier. So have you seen the stats for Nathan Hughes and Moriarty in terms of carries and metres made, the two number eights? Moriarty defended brilliantly but did not carry very well.
Yeah.
He made 11 carries for 11 metres. Not good.
Not good.
Fact. Thank you, Tim.
Are we getting some feedback?
We are getting a bit of echo.
Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. There you go. That's my end. The shipping container playing up.
Ah, right, okay. Nathan Hughes, who a lot of people did give some stick on Twitter, he made 22 carries for 75 metres.
That's not bad.
That is, it's very good. He did carry upright at times and he got smashed a few times, but his work rate was immense. Actually, the most disappointing part of the English back row.
Clifford. Where was he? What did he do?
So when England have got their full strength team and you have Billy doing a lot of the carrying, but you have Mako Vunipola, who's like a secondary carrier.
Exactly.
England had Jack Clifford, who is a 6'7", 8". He can play as an 8. He should have been carrying all day long. Do you know how many carries he made?
I don't remember him making a single carry, to be fair. I'm not saying he didn't, but I can't remember him.
2 carries for 2 metres.
Really?
And so that meant that Nathan Hughes had to do all of the carrying. Yeah. Laws put his hands up a number of times. Launchbury put his hand up a number of times. But they're not. They're never going to make huge yards.
Who would have predicted, go back a year or more, who would have predicted we'd firstly be in the situation where England have done 16 on the bounce, but secondly, that the player they're missing above all others is, well, no, Billy Vunipola, obviously, but how much that they're missing Chris Robshaw.
Robshaw, yeah. And Haskell.
Definitely Haskell.
He's come off the bench, but they are missing Haskell.
He gives you so much power and so much, he puts you on the front foot defensively.
And his work rate and what's impressed
me. Yeah, his work rate in his defence is outstanding.
What has actually impressed me the last 2 weeks, and it's not something I've seen from him historically, but when he has come on, and it's probably because he's playing against tired legs, but he's carried well.
Mm.
He's actually given some go forward.
Well, he does carry hard. I mean, he's not explosive.
He carries hard and he'll get across the gain line by a metre, but no more than
that's
that.
That's all you need.
Yeah, I know. And yeah. I'm agreeing with Phil. I do wish he'd pull his socks up, though.
Yeah, fair. Very fair.
It bugs me. He looks so much better with socks pulled up. Players all do. He wants to put the maximum amount of skin on show that he can.
Do we think going forward now we're going to see a different looking England team? Do you think we're going to see the introduction of, say, Ben Teo?
Big Ben Teo, BBT.
Yeah, BBT. We've mentioned Deliot? Elliot's Daly to fullback.
I'll rattle through a few points that people have made on Twitter. Ben Tabman said, Danny Kerr, should he start or is he better as an impact sub? Which would you go for if you had to pick right now? We don't need a discussion, just rattle through it.
Ben Spencer.
Kerr to start.
Kerr to start for me as well.
I would go Wigglesworth, actually, being serious. Go on, next.
Wigglesworth, okay. Robert Hirsch on Twitter, at Rugby Podcast. How many positions should Elliot Daly start at the same time? #  all the skills.
Definitely 13, 14 and 15. Jack Noel 11, Elliot Daly 13, 14, 15.
Can I just point something out about the England backline now? I was talking to a fullback, it was Chris Pennell, and he is giving a description of like how hard it is to defend as a fullback when you've got multiple kicking options. Because what they're trying to do a lot of the times is they say change the picture. So they'll go shallow, and then last minute they'll all go deep. So the fly half has got to change what he was previously doing, right?
Yeah.
Now I am going somewhere with this, which is multiple kicking options now in England. You've got Ford, you've got Farrell, you've got Daly. Watson can sort of kick at fullback.
Mike Brown has got an excellent left boot.
Yeah. How hard must England be to position
your back three?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something we've talked about for a long time. The one thing I love about the England squad at the minute, and this isn't Eddie Jones, this is just the players that have been developed, and Stuart Lancaster should take as much credit for this as anybody, but we have players like Ben Smith who can happily slot in number of positions, or like Matt Gitto for Australia. These typically qualities you associate with Southern Hemisphere sides, where they have just really amazing basic skills that mean they have and good rugby brains that they mean they can operate anywhere, which just opens up opportunities and it opens up possibilities. And England have that at the minute in a way that we've never had it before.
Not since Mike Catt, Austin Healey kind of time.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very very impressive. I think probably the most impressive thing is when I look back at this game, I remember a lot of Wales players playing very well, and a lot of England players being underwhelming, and yet England come away with a win.
Well, yeah.
Go on, Phil.
No, I was just going to make the point we'd made last week, which is kind of the test of a team is not playing at your best, but still managing to grind out those victories. And the last 2 weeks, England, they could have been, because they were playing poorly, they could have been 10-15 points down, but they never let the opposition get more than a score ahead, and they always kind of ground away and stayed in it, and that is impressive.
Can I point out one reason? I mean, what were you like in that last 5-10 minutes, Phil? Because my daughter Connie just had to tell me to stop shouting.
That must be very annoying. That must have been. I can't imagine anything more annoying than being told to stop shouting.
I was watching it with my old man, and I was worried that one of us might have a heart attack. His edge of the seat stuff, certainly.
One reason that made it all the sweeter was this.
This?
Hold on. Did you see this?
No.
Oh no! Sorry, I've got the wrong one. It's this one. Did you see this?
What's good about England?
That whole the Welsh advert that was banned. What's good about England? And it's just a load of different Welsh people just screwing their nose up. It got banned and complaints
banned.
And stuff.
Do you know what? Some of these adverts.
That and Jonathan Davies being the most partisan commentator since Alan Quinlan and Robson in that All Blacks second test, New Zealand Ireland.
Some of these adverts, right, which play up to Welsh nationalism, are some of the worst adverts I've ever seen. They've done one recently with Scott Quinnell, who trots. He takes.
I unleash the dragon.
Yeah, he takes time out of his day. He gets on a bus. He travels all the way to Victoria Station, so he can press a little siren thing. And tell everyone he's Welsh. They're all going to work. They simply don't care. And then they bring in some choir. It's just awful. All Welsh centric adverts tend to be really, really bad because they make out that everyone in Wales has nothing to do other than wait around for the Six Nations, and that's it.
And hate England.
They might have a point.
Well, what did you think of? I mean, I have moaned in the past at pundits not having opinions, so I really like it when people have opinions.
I'll tell you who was good today, really good, Castagnard and Blair. Was it Mike Blair?
Yeah, Mike Blair was.
He was spot on.
Mike Blair was very good.
It wasn't. Actually, Castagnard did make some good. He did make some good points. Actually, we'll get onto that game in a second. But what did you make of Jiffy?
I couldn't hear him because I was watching RTE.
I think they're both useless. I think Brian Moore is marginally better than Jiffy. I actually, while they're useless individually, I actually think they make quite an entertaining double act. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they're very good, but I don't mind it, if that makes any sense. Just because they're both almost as biased as one another. Jiffy did have a few ludicrous moments, though.
Offside at one point. Yeah. He's offside!
And then eventually when
he sounded like Reese Webb.
Eventually when they got a replay and Brian Moore was like, look there, he's not offside. Oh yeah, he's not offside. Yeah. Brilliant, great analysis.
they're both mailing it in, aren't they? I mean, they've both got...
The effort... I mean, I am completely biased, but being part of... You know, only a very small cog in an already established and brilliantly working BT Sport machine. So I'm very, very biased, but I think the coverage that they do is absolute light years ahead.
Yes.
Of where you've got to the BBC are.
You've basically got
100%.
You've basically just got to do your work, haven't you? You've got to talk to the players, talk to the management, do your work, and find out exactly what you're talking about prior to going to the game. That's what he's
doing. That graphics breakdown of the Welsh try,
the Liam Williams try
with Jonathan Davies doing the graphics on the screen was amazing.
I love the angles of the eyes. I mean, where did you expect the eyes to be looking if his head's going forward? The little eye, the vision cones.
But Jiffy trying to work the computer to show this player here, this player, and he clicks three times on the grass and it just highlights three different blades of grass. And then finally highlights Owen Farrell and they cut back to the game.
Yeah, he's about to go, okay, so this is the moment. He's been clicking on the grass at all these places you're going, I don't know what you're doing here, drawing these weird like play school lines on the screen. Yeah. And then he says, and now, and just as they're about to run the tape, it cuts back to live action.
Brilliant.
Oh dear.
Let's move on.
Not only that, on the bit, I genuinely think what might be happening is the BBC might have actually got quite rusty at doing rugby because they don't do very much of it. Because there was loads of balls up with the scores as well in the Welsh game and in the Scotland France game. They put the wrong team with the scoreboard a bunch of times.
Some intern doing the scoreboards.
Yeah, clearly they're just not interested, are they? I mean, sport just isn't on their agenda. They want to do other things like ram some sort of political ideology down your throat. It's so far away from a priority for them. It's no wonder they're terrible at it.
Patrick Logan on Twitter said, is it time for JB to acknowledge the mighty power of BBT?
Well, is it? I want to see him start now. I want to see him start in a good team and see what he can do.
You're just saying that because you're like a British tabloid. You want to build him up just so you can knock him down. You're just waiting for a bad game.
You give me far too much credit for how far I think about anything.
And Jerome Garr says he's sort of was loved and hated. I think the officiating was better in week two, definitely, than week one.
Ooh.
Yeah. I thought he let the boys play generally. Sometimes there was elements where some of those touch and go tackles that might other refs might have penalised or yellow carded with the new laws, and he just let the boys play, which I was all for.
Yeah.
He also didn't seem to mind about, you know, the odd little knock on forward pass. Just crack on, lads.
Just on that, I did think he did seem to be influenced by Webb and Alan Wynne-Jones when they were calling for the TMO.
Like, yes,
Webb, Webb's try, for example, where he said, I've seen it and he was short, but Webb was mouthing off, so he went and looked at the TMO. But he didn't go back to the TMO for the Moriarty late hit on Farrell.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a bit odd, a bit inconsistent, I'd say.
Yeah, what I found it interesting, I was sort of in two minds about that, because obviously if Reece Webb had scored, it would have been, we'd have all been saying, why didn't he just check it? The technology's there, just check it. But being prompted by a player and then changing your mind about whether you're going to go to the TMO or not, I don't mind it overly, but it's just where that could end up.
Yeah, I this is where my law, that if a player chimes up and says call for the TMO, if that player is wrong, they get a yellow card.
Yes. I love it.
So they will only ever do it if they know they're 100% right. So all of a sudden, he would shut his mouth.
Agreed.
Agreed.
There was a game today, Wasps versus Exeter, and the ref was awesome. Like, I'm not sure if he got, and I don't mean his decision making, I don't mean the way he interpreted the laws, the way he handled the administration of the laws. So immediately gave a penalty try, immediately gave someone a yellow card. Very decisive reffing.
Well, we awesome. Can talk about that, and we can talk about various other brilliant Avicii Premiership games in the midweek domestic podcast.
Absolutely, we can. Shall we talk about Scotland?
Yeah, you mentioned Thomas Castagnède was part of this production. I agree. I particularly enjoyed his pronunciation of
Swinton.
Alex Cuthbert, right. Who we haven't mentioned, and perhaps we should, but he pronounces Cuthbert like you would pronounce Camembert.
Oh, nice.
Alex Cuthbert.
That's such a better name as well, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? And anyone else just get really hungry every time Goujon's name is mentioned.
Ooh, yes.
Ooh, I want some chicken nuggets.
What's his name? The prop salami. What's his name?
Slimani.
Slimani.
Chucky. I do get hungry when I hear Chucky.
So one of the things Castagnède had said, which I really liked, and I'd love to know if this is true, and it sounded true because the way it almost sounded like he knew this fact and he was saving it up and it was not related to the conversation and he threw it in. It's like kind of thing I would do. He said that France want to keep their best props on the bench for the last 30 minutes.
Yeah, I heard this.
I hope that's true because I love that strategy.
It's an interesting... Well, you can see they're starting with the biggest possible team they can, aren't they? And then bringing the better scrummaging props. But, God, it worked. Their scrummaging for the last 20, 30 minutes was astonishing. It was just penalty after penalty.
I don't understand, right, why they went for points. So, quite often, you see teams get criticised for not taking enough points. I don't know, if you're that dominant in the scrum, you've got four, maybe the world's best props at the moment. I mean, they're that good. I mean, they even battered England, and England aren't a bad scrummaging team. Why don't you call for the scrummage over and over again? Because you don't want your players in the loose because they're too big and fat. You don't want to limit the amount of scrums because that's where you're best. So why not keep going for the scrum and earning yellow cards and beating people up?
They did. They did precisely that, didn't they? They had driving maul that was going really well, won a penalty. Another line out, won a penalty, then scrummed it twice, I think.
Yeah, they kicked points from the pressure that scrum put on them. So I would say actually, if you were going to point one area where the game was won and lost, it was the scrum.
Yeah. Well, would you like to see? Would you rather choose 3 points, or would you rather have the opposition have a yellow card?
Give me the points.
Really?
Particularly with... Because that was in a position where there was less than 10 minutes on the clock. Mm. And I think... Which they did eventually, but they had... They turned down about three opportunities for going for the posts before they eventually took it. And I was calling for them to take it earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
I've mentioned in the past my disdain for, and we were talking last week about maybe the in the modern day rugby the buffest players on the pitch will be props because the shape that guys like Max Lahiff are in with a really amazing rig, but being able to play prop. Adrian Moore tweeted us at Rugby Podcast and said, "I imagine Owini Antonio's rippling the old school prop credentials every scrum as his shirt rides up is more to your liking." Yes.
Absolutely.
Rugby union props should be in shape. That shape should be round. I love seeing the Owini Antonio shirt. Lovely shirt, by the way. I couldn't decide for a while whether I loved or loathed that French change jersey.
Hate it.
But I really like it.
I quite like it as well.
No, I hate the current one and I hate the change one. I think they're awful, both of them.
Their main shirt is the wrong colour.
Yep.
But apart from that, I like it.
Nope, not having it. So a few things about this were interesting. I thought Scotland did well, but I don't think they... I think they're going to get praised too much. I don't think that they looked after the ball nearly enough. They had a ton of turnovers. And France played a very peculiar way. They didn't run onto the ball hardly ever. There was lots of passing, but lots of static passing, which I find remarkable for a professional team.
Well, I disagree with that to a point. I think they did some of the very deep passing, but then they had periods of play where they were taking it to the line, taking contact, and then looking for the offloads.
Mm,
yeah. And those were the periods of times where they were their most effective.
Yeah, so off a set play, or say off a ruck, they would go to Lopez, who then would be static. He doesn't challenge the line.
No, he doesn't at all.
He then flings another pass to another guy who doesn't challenge the line. It takes usually one of the Fijian lads to say, right, time to go. And then when you go forward, that's when they start doing the offloading, which looks great. But for whatever reason
I liked it that they were kind of sublime and they'd do this brilliant, mad, old-school French rugby offloading and then they'd just do something utterly ridiculous. That's how I want France. That's how France should play.
Yeah. There's something cool about France, isn't there? There's something cool about...
Yeah. They need to be unpredictable and like, have total brain farts sometimes and then just do something that no other team on earth could do. That's what I expect France to do, and I'll be disappointed if they do anything other than that, frankly. The one brain fart that's worth mentioning is Finn Russell.
His conversion.
What on earth?
Oh, well, did you hear the commentary afterwards about this?
The try had been scored, but there was a forward pass.
Yeah.
Is that what the thinking was? So he was trying to get the kick done as quickly as possible so they couldn't go to a TMO.
Yeah.
And the ball fell off the tee as he was rushing.
Yeah, so I think the theory here is a little bit like in the NFL, do you know when they spike the ball? You can't, in the NFL, you can't review a play after the next play's been.
Yeah.
Okay? I think that's the theory with rugby, although I'm not sure that is a law. So he rushed it, and I'm not entirely sure he'd have got any benefit out of it, even if it had worked. But Nathan Hines runs on with the tee, and he is apparently saying, take it quick, take it quick, take it quick, because they're worried about the TMO review.
Yeah.
So that is what happened.
In that scenario, just drop it. Drop goal.
Yeah.
Why even place the tee? Because that is true. Once the conversion has been taken, you can't go back.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It
has happened a couple of times, and it's happened where the ref... The kicker is lined up to take the kick, and just before he's about to start his run-up, the TMO comes into the ref's ear and he says, hang on a second, let's go back, and the try gets disallowed.
I see. Okay, well, there you are then. So that's what happened. They tried to rush it, fell off the tee, and thank God they didn't lose by 1 point. That's what I'm saying.
No.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Scotland played well in large parts of this game. I think Scotland... They did have a number of injuries throughout this game. I think they had three head injury assessments throughout this game, and they lost a load of players, particularly in the back. A little bit on their lack of strength in depth, but also a bit on the strength in depth and the size and strength of the French team.
Mm. Phil, are you struggling to say the word depth, mate? Or is it down the line that I can't hear you properly? Is that a word you struggle with?
I think I'm saying it okay.
I know I'm struggling to talk because I'm hungover.
Depth.
Oh, you nailed it, mate. You nailed it. Absolutely on the money.
It must be the lead-lined shipping container. I'm not coming through quite as well.
Lead-lined safety first and foremost.
Exactly. Shipping container / bomb shelter, just in case.
What does lead line mean? You're a quantity surveyor, mate. I don't understand. I talk for a living.
Well, lead line would be like to prevent radiation, I would assume.
It would be, actually.
In case of nuclear war.
Yeah. There you go.
In case. I think if Scotland hadn't had so many injuries, and you saw it with their scrum going backwards at a rate, not towards the end. If they hadn't have had so many injuries and they had a bit more strength and depth, they could have won this. But unfortunately...
Yeah, but we're getting into this. We're going if with Wales. If with Scotland.
Tired of ads interfering with your favourite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Scotland have got a bad scrum. They've got an amazing backline. If they could scrummage, they'd be a match for absolutely anyone. But whilst they're walking backwards in the scrum, fortunately, rugby hasn't yet made the scrum. It's still enough of a contest that it's really relevant.
Yeah.
They're not going to beat a South Africa in a World Cup or a New Zealand or an England or a France in a really, really big game if they can't scrummage.
You're completely right.
You've nailed it. WP Nel is a huge, huge loss.
Yes.
Still not recovered from his neck surgery.
To South Africa.
South Africa. Well, isn't Alan... isn't Dell also a South African?
Is he?
Yeah. And...
Strauss
is.
Yeah, and there's someone else as well who they are missing who is not South African, but they are missing him.
So Finn Russell... Or Fun Russell, as he should be called, because he's just—he's a hoot when you're
is
watching
he?
It. So you'd be jumping out your seat if you're a Scottish fan and pulling your hair out, because in the space of 30 seconds, he made the wrong decision to kick low, which resulted in a charge down.
Yeah.
He made a miracle offload, which gets a Scotland try under the post, and then missed the conversion directly from that kick. He's an enigma.
Entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, he's box office entertainment. I don't know if you'd want to put your life on him as 10, but against New Zealand, the Lions are going to have to score tries. That's in his favour.
That is true. And also, he should be playing in the same team as Tim Swinson. Let's just talk about that performance for a second.
Try-scoring
hero. He was in the right position and finished off a good Scottish move to score a try. Good. Let's move on.
Tim Swinson, box office. Like Maro Itoje, but better at rugby. That's how I'd describe him. Second row, back row. Probably be captain, though.
Just going back to the Itoje thing, it wasn't sort of mentioned or highlighted much, but did you notice that Itoje had six on his back but was scrummaging at second row? Courtney
Not
Law
all
was
the
on
time,
the
though.
Yeah, it wasn't all the time. It was only in certain scenarios.
Yeah.
And I couldn't work out why, because I think Laws is taller and a little bit heavier than Itoje.
Is he?
He's definitely taller, yeah.
I'm not sure he's heavier. Because he's very slight.
We're both quite lean, aren't we? I wouldn't call him slight.
Slight.
No, he's
oh my
tall
goodness
and...
me.
Slight is not the right word.
He's very slight.
In rugby terms, okay, there's big. That's Mitch Lees. There's then smaller and slight.
Mitch Lees is enormous.
Yeah. There is a range of second rows.
Slight is not the right word.
And on the second row spectrum, he is slight.
Right. Okay. All right, who'd be at the very bottom of that spectrum? I'm trying to think of the bean poliest second row.
Charteris.
Because like back in the day, there was a Luke Charteris.
Charteris back in the day before he got
Charteris. Yeah, Charteris is like 130 kilograms, isn't it? Best part of.
Yeah, but when he first showed up, there wasn't much of him.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, there was a lot of him. You know, high, tall.
Very long dog.
I'm telling you, he's 7 foot. I've played in a team with him. He is 7 foot. He just doesn't like to admit it.
There you go. Who else is...
We'll put that one out there then. At Rugby Podcast, we can update this on it. Who is the... If Mitch Lees, or there must be a bigger second row that's even chunkier.
Yeah.
Will Skelton?
Takori? Something like that?
Joe Takori's big boy. Skelton's heavier, sure.
Yeah, so one of that, who is the like the bean poliest quality second row?
Charlie Matthews.
The enforcer.
The enforcer.
Yeah.
Nonsense.
Gaskell.
Gaskell's a good shout.
Yeah, see?
He's bulked up a bit recently, though.
Yeah, actually, these guys are massive. Yeah. If you see Gaskell, he is actually, you know, he's got big old thighs on him.
Yeah.
He's just out of proportion, which makes him look strange.
He's got very long legs, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Gaskell.
Yeah, so there you go. Interesting.
It was a top kicking performance by Scotland. Not only was there the Finn Russell, where he looked like he was trying to score a penalty kick in football under the bar, but there was the kick where it hit the crossbar.
Yeah.
There was a kick that hit the camera.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, they didn't manage to complete it doing left post, right post. But it was a pretty pretty strong kicking effort from Scotland, just in entertainment terms.
Yeah, I think so. I think they've been working on that all week, and it's probably something they'll work on during their off week as well.
I agree. I completely agree.
In terms of good kicking, we should get on to Italy Ireland.
Yes, let's do that.
But before we do, would now be a good time to drop in a mid-roll, perhaps, JB?
Yes. So a lot of you are getting annoyed out there because we have adverts in the podcast which are dropped in by our partners over at Acast. So they literally have an advert and they drop it in. Done. And we...
It's like a bit of... Basically, we have a little bit of real estate which Acast...
I can't wait for this.
...kind of own. They own a little chunk of the podcast, if you like. And they decide where they want to plonk, what plot they want to put it in this week. So... It does sound weird when it just pops up in mid-sentence, doesn't it?
Yeah, so we're now going to tell you there's going to be an advert now. And now the advert should be over. Now, if that works, we're going to do that every week. If it doesn't, there you go. It hasn't worked.
So please give us some constructive criticism on Twitter about this, at Rugby Podcast.
There you go.
Now, before we go on, Phil. Before we do as well, before we get into Ireland, Italy... We have also been sent in a brilliant quiz. So is now a good time to do this? Because it actually links quite nicely with the French team.
Okay, let's do the quiz, Ireland, Italy, the new rugby elevator section, and we've got to talk about Romania.
Sounds good to me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I've had a suggestion for a new crusade. If you think back that we started the crusade to make... And it was particularly Six Nations captains that were the worst defenders at it, wearing trainers in promotional pictures.
They still are.
We started that campaign. And if you see a Canterbury photo shoot, you will never see a player in trainers.
That is
and
true.
We did that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Small things, eh? Small things making a big difference.
And then what was another crusade? I can't remember. We had another big one.
Haven't you got that England for the English crusade going on at the
moment?
Yeah,
yeah. So... I mean, you're actually a good one to talk about crusades with your EDL-style selection policies.
I just want to maintain the integrity of what it means to be wear
English.
The rose or to pull on an international jersey of any shade. Yeah. But
right.
Yeah, all right. So we've got loads of things on the agenda today, but I think now's a perfect time for a quiz, Phil.
Okay, so Matt Phillips, long-time listener, has been in touch, and he's trying to beat the historic quiz that JB came up with, Springbok or Nazi War Criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have got is French number 9 or French cheese for your wine.
Oh,
exceptional.
Bravo.
Now this
the Springbok v Nazi War Criminal has become such a benchmark. There's been a number of efforts to try and emulate or surpass it. The efforts are always great, but it's never been done. Maybe this is the time.
Hopefully.
Maybe. It is a tall ask to try and beat Springbok or Nazi War Criminal.
Nasty War Criminal.
Nasty Nazi. Right, here we go. And I'm going to channel my best Eddie Butler impression as well for this. So, number 1, Jean Brillat Savarin Is he, or is that, a cheese to go with pâté, or a nine to boss round fatties?
Nice.
Jean Brillat Savarin.
I believe he played for Biarritz in 1980s. Tim?
I'll go for cheese then.
Good.
Very good. Tim, you are correct.
Oh,
yes.
I thought if I made up some more information about him,
it would change the facts.
Yeah, yeah. Or at least convince Tim.
So, it is a soft cow's milk cheese from Normandy.
Oh, wow. Next.
Olivette, or Olivet, cendré. Is that made with milk from a goat?
Uh-huh.
Or someone who likes to showboat?
Ah.
I'll go first on this one.
Fire away.
That is a cheese again.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, that is a scrum half who first started playing rugby for the French Marines and ended up in Bordeaux circa 1973.
I can confirm Tim is correct again.
Oh, this is a nonsense, this quiz.
It's a delicate cow's milk cheese from the Loire Valley.
Fine, whatever. Next.
Okay. Liliane Camberabero.
Right, okay.
Is that soft and creamy, or does it have eyes that are dreamy?
Oh, okay.
JV?
Eyes that are dreamy for me, please. One of these has to be a scrum half.
Tim?
What was the name again?
Liliane Camberabero.
This guy fell out
now,
with his club president.
I know there was definitely a Camberabero that was a...
cheese.
Definitely a scrum half and captain. I think he was the French international captain in the 1987 World Cup when they got to the final and lost to New Zealand, the very first World Cup. So, or was he a 10? I'm pretty sure he was a halfback. But Camberabero, French player, for certain. So I'm
both,
with JV
so
on that.
Both going for nines.
Yeah, both going for nines. And I can confirm Camberabero debuted on 29th of November 1964.
Wow.
So same Camberabero then.
And his brother and father also played for France. So
it could be that guy.
Rugby playing family.
Oh no, hold on. Camberabero, do you remember that incredible French try in the early 90s?
No.
When France scored, it might have been the Grand Slam year with Will Carling being carried off the pitch, that kind of thing, but France scored a try from beneath their own
what?
Sticks.
Was that
Philippe
the...
Saint-André might have finished it, but Camberabero was in that team. There was a Camberabero in that team, I think.
Ah, okay.
Castagnède might have even been in that era as well. Anyway, doesn't matter. I'm just trying to make up for the fact that I was so sure, but I knew who it was and I didn't.
sounds like you got him, or sort of got him.
Yeah, rugby playing family, so you may well have done.
Let's do it.
Next one. Tommy Bouton.
Tommy Bouton.
Is it...
cheese.
Is it high in saturated fat, or does it have really bad chat? these only get worse, by the way. They're pretty bad already.
Worse, better. Cheese.
Tommy Boutin. He plays. He played for Montferrand before the two clubs sort of came together. The old Montferrand.
So Tim's saying number nine. Jay, you're saying a cheese.
Yep.
Jay is correct.
Yes.
3-2.
Are you trying to psych me out, Tim, by adding these extra bits of detail?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's working. Okay.
Next one. Honoré Lafont.
My turn to go first.
Go for that.
Will this give you nightmares if you eat it too late, or is he unable to feed the ball in straight?
Mm-hmm.
Honoré Lafont.
He had only for France because
Tim? No, Tim's gone. So I will tell you right now that
I'm here.
Oh, hello, Tim. Hello, Tim.
I'm here.
What was your answer?
I said he was a French player, two caps, but he got caught having it off with the coach's daughter and never played again.
The old, what was it, the name, the United player, Zaha with Moyles. Moyes' daughter.
He definitely did a Zaha.
Tim is right. He is a scrum half, but he's wrong about which scrum half he is. This guy actually had three caps. And he was part-time scrum half, full-time artist, sadly died of a cigarette accident, age 32.
You are both correct.
Yes!
The fact that he was a number nine, not the auxiliary details. Debuted in April 1926 against Wales.
Wow.
Okay, last two, and it's currently 4-3 to Tim.
Is it? I'm doing remarkably well.
So... Yves Burgoyne.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want it on your plate or getting the ball from the number eight?
I think this is a cheese.
Yves Burgoyne.
I could just be really tight and just go and guarantee a win. Oh, what the hell? Let's make it interesting. Player.
I can tell you, Tim, you are correct.
Oh, yes.
Now, according to Matt Phillips, this gentleman, Yves, debuted on 1st of January 1945.
Wow.
1st of January 1945.
Weren't
there a lot against the British Army, apparently. But
were they not busy?
Yeah, I'm sure they should be concentrating.
Getting a cap in that era doesn't count.
So,
well, actually, so if it was 1st of January, they did have the historic Christmas Day football games, didn't
they?
Well,
yeah, exactly.
So maybe this was a similar thing.
So, I'll tell you about a team talk that I had once, one of my favourite ever team talks. And we were playing Bolton. I've never played Bolton before, for Broughton Park. And they were celebrating their centenary. This is 2015.
Yeah.
And our coach, Andy Daldry, got up and said, what kind of club sets up during a World War? We know what went on here. Which I had to do like the maths. Oh, yeah.
Very good.
What's the insinuation? We know what went on here. What's the suggestion?
Well, that they weren't fighting the war. They were playing rugby instead.
Yeah. Hey, well, do you know what? If there was a war and there was conscription and you were made to go, I'm not concerned at all in saying I would have been one of the people that just walked to the nearest prison and handed myself in. There'd be no way. I'm not fighting for Queen and country, thank you very much. No chance.
Oh, there you go. What would I do? As I'm told, because that's what I'm famous for doing, isn't it?
Yeah. You do the exact opposite of that. I would be doing what I'm told. I think I'd quite like to fight in a war.
No, I think it'd be horrific.
maybe not.
Do you know what would be my perfect job? Drone operator. I could do that.
Sit in a shipping container.
Yeah.
Speaking of drones, have you seen the Brian Mujati drone incident?
No.
He has a drone that he uses to get the aerial shots for his Life of Brian video.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he flies it around South Manchester. And what was the incident though, Phil?
Well, there is one worrying incident that he seems to have got away with, where he was flying over Manchester Airport at one point.
What?
But he seems to have completely got away with this.
What?
He was over the apron of Manchester Airport.
No.
Yes, honestly.
That is highly illegal. I don't need to tell you that.
Yes, I know that. He got away with that one, but when he was in Toulon, he got arrested because he said he was flying, waiting on the day of the game. He was just having a wander around and he wanted to kind of fly about, see the city from the air or the town from the air. And he said he flew over towards the dock area and came over this horizon and all of a sudden was directly on top of a military training operation.
Wow. Well, it's a military town, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's where I think they keep their aircraft carrier there.
So he got arrested for that.
Lad.
Brian. He needs to be careful.
He does.
Got away with it.
He does.
Well,
anyway.
I've got a mate. You were just saying about you'd like to fight in a war. I've got a mate who he was in the army when he was young, and he works for Vodafone now, but that's as a result of him being in the communications corps. And he said he was in the purple patch when there was absolutely nothing going on. So he spent about 2 years in Belize, and he had 1 hour's work a day to do, which was basically just making sure a line was still open. And then he spent the rest of the time around the pool. And then he was in Northern Ireland, but when there was stuff going on there. But his only job was to be kind of the remote eyes and ears of the operatives who were going in and doing, breaking into places and doing stuff. So he sounds like he had a pretty cushy job. So there are jobs out there that maybe you could do, Phil, that you might like to do, but no, you're all right.
No, I want to be frontline, charging at machine guns.
No, drone
please.
Operator.
Right. Last question. Tim has already won.
Is there any point in the last question? Because he's won.
We've got one more.
Go then.
We might as well just do it, because it's a very good quiz from Matt. So, Adèle de Clairon.
Adèle de Clairon.
is
French for red Leicester cheddar.
Is it something you want to lick, or can he do a good box kick?
I'm gonna say Adèle is a box kicker.
And Tim, you're saying cheese?
Yeah, it is. It's an English cheddar.
It is a soft cow's milk cheese from Doob's.
I'd love to go to France and try all these cheeses.
Yeah, me too. I'm quite hungry now. So, Tim Cocker wins 6-3.
Perfect.
Yeah.
There we go.
Good work, Mike.
Matt Phillips.
Matt. Good work, Matt. And if anyone else would like to... where do we stand, boys? Is that doesn't usurp... Unfortunately, it was very, very good, but it doesn't usurp Springbok or Nazi War Criminal. That's still yet to be done, isn't it?
Yes. It will take some beating. I'd love to see someone try.
Plenty will try, Phil. Plenty will try.
Yeah. Let's do it. So if you've got something to rival Springbok or Nazi War Criminal, please get in touch at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. We're streaming there on Facebook Live. You can go back and watch the video of this, see the rugby dungeon and all the rest of it. Now, we've got other things to deal with. Just very quickly then, just let me sow the seed, because we have been contacted about a possible crusade that we should be on. And it's actually started by Will Carling. Our listener, Andrew Foster, has got in touch and said, this should be your new crusade. And Will Carling tweeted earlier today, it's very old-fashioned, but I really enjoyed listening to the anthems being sung by the stadiums in Paris and Cardiff with no singer. Twickenham, take note. So the crusade would be Twickenham, no singer for the anthems.
No, I don't think so. Because I think, actually, sometimes the singers are good. The English national anthem isn't particularly stirring, but I do sometimes get rather excited by the singers that they bring in. Catherine, what is a sporting event without Catherine Jenkins?
Ask David Beckham what he thinks of Catherine Jenkins.
Ooh.
No, that's not that they've been hooked up. It's that he was one of the people David Beckham was kicking off about got an MBE or whatever, and he didn't get his knighthood.
Yes.
Oh, right. Oh, I see. Did not know that. Do I think singers... No, I... And also, there are some anthems you simply can't do without a singer. American anthem, Australian anthem. So... Mm. Don't mind.
Yeah, I'm less bothered about this, I would say.
All right, fine. We're not going to pick it up as a crusade, Andrew, but thanks for getting in touch. Well, one thing that we did start as a crusade is our effort to try and shine a light and try and do what we can from our little podcast that we have here and our group of listeners to do something for Tier 2 rugby.
So here we are, Ireland versus Italy, yeah?
We just don't want to talk about Romania.
I'm joking, mate.
All right. Oh, I see. Sorry. I thought I'd broken up again.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, as in Germany, the news came through via the Twitter sphere, and I had to watch this game. So I sat down and watched it today. It was really, really good. Now, the first thing that you should know is you can watch this as a rugby fan, and it is a genuinely high quality game. So do you know when you watch, you'd watch periods of a France game today, and you'd say France look completely incompetent when they're standing still, passing the ball side to side. This simply didn't happen in the Romania-Germany game. Also remember, Germany are not a tier two nation. They are a tier three nation.
Wow.
So this is the first win Germany have had over Romania, I think, since the end of the Second World War. It's a big, big deal. And Germany were, at one point, 18 points down coming into half-time, and they still turned it around. It's really good. So the set piece was solid. The defence looked... sometimes it looked a little weak, but overall it was very, very well organised. And just the general standard of the play was very impressive.
So you're looking forward even more now to our trip out to Romania?
Yes, absolutely. If Georgia and Romania can like maintain those sorts of levels, it's going to be a cracking game.
Well,
but it is worth watching. I mean, I was dual screening, I had Wasps and Exeter going on, and I can honestly say the Romania game was a better game to watch than the Wasps game.
Whoa, that's a massive statement. We'll get onto that in the midweek domestic podcast, that particular one. I mean, yes, I am looking forward to seeing Romania v Georgia. Absolutely looking forward to the rugby. I'm also looking forward to an amazing weekend. And so are over 100 Egg Chasers listeners. We have been blown away by the number of people that are coming on this this journey with us. Despite all the talk of revolution and rioting in Romania... which there has been this week. Did you see all that?
Yes. I'm keeping a very close eye on it.
I don't know whether to be worried or excited about low-level bribery being decriminalised, because perhaps it gives us a big opportunity.
Exactly right, mate. I mean, with exchange rate and everything else, it'd be fine. who knows? We will find out. But we have got over 100 people going, which is superb. I can't believe it.
It's very, very exciting. And the whole weekend will be absolutely brilliant.
It's very exciting. It's incredibly nerve-wracking. But it's lucky we've done loads of these live shows and we know exactly what we're doing.
Oh, yeah. We're pros at the live shows. Technically, we've done it so many times to iron out all the kinks and all the problems that there's no chance of anything going wrong.
Yes.
Yeah. It will be a very, very fun weekend. So we would still say, and we're looking at other options because there's already more. We booked a venue for the podcast, half expecting it to be us and maybe 10 other people.
20 people. We'd bring 10 of our friends, including us, and then maybe 10 others might come in. We sold all of our tickets in 2 hours.
They do have, they might have low-level bribery, but they also have health and safety laws in Romania. And for that reason, got as many people into the venue as we can. There is more people that would want to come and hang out and be part of a live podcast than we can accommodate due to the demand we did not anticipate.
Yeah.
And we're delighted about. But as a result, we're looking at other things we can do around the match itself, either side of or after the game or whatever that we can do that will make it other kind of events. But regardless, brilliant city. Loads of people there. We'll be watching Six Nations on the Saturday, watching Romania, Georgia on the Sunday, and having a bunch of beers and having a good crack. So it'll be well worth the trip.
Looking forward to meeting you all. Ireland, Italy.
Yes.
What do you want to say about this? I'll tell you what I thought about this. I watched 20 minutes of it. It looked like a complete mismatch. Italy, or still a bit of a joke, went to sleep. You?
Watched it all. Was very disappointed in the way that Italy kind of capitulated towards the end. So, first half, it was kind of as expected. Ireland played very, very well. They came out of the blocks exactly as we said that we would. But Italy put up a good fight. The last 20 minutes, Italy, it looked like they just gave up.
Yeah.
The Gilroy hat-trick, he came on with 20 minutes to go and scored a hat-trick. And a couple of those, it really looked like the Italian team weren't bothering. They just switched off. And that's the most frustrating thing.
I don't know if it's like a team culture that they've got, but they seem very adverse to trying hard.
The first half against Wales, they tried very... They were good.
Yeah.
But they have switched off.
So, people keep talking, don't they, about the relegation promotion from the Six Nations?
Which you repeatedly will not have any part of.
Well, it won't even consider it. But I would consider kicking out Italy altogether, reducing the number of games, going back to five nations. And, you know, if you look at the Romania-Germany game, this is exactly why you shouldn't be cherry-picking the best from the European Nations Cup and moving them into Six Nations. Because who would Germany have played against? But I actually think Italy stepping down a level, going to play Georgia and getting beaten by Georgia every year and having a close game with Romania and watching the Germans gradually improve and having that rivalry in that tournament would probably be better for the game. It'd certainly be better for the nations playing in the level below the Six Nations.
Well, do you know what? I would go with you on that one, JB, if it isn't a case of casting those sides adrift and if it was part of a more structured, say, three teams of five, three tiers, five teams in each. Maybe you would have to have a playoff between bottom and top,
so that you can
aspire to be at the top table. But if all of the money from the television, which will undoubtedly get masses, was spread more evenly, so you could develop the game, then I would go with you.
No. So this is where you're not thinking right. Think about it like this: it's more like American college sport, where you have a conference and you always stay in your conference, and those are the rivalries that bring you the money, and those are the fun games. The autumns, everyone can play everyone else, and World Cups, everyone can play everyone else. But the reason you want it structured like this is, think about how awful World Cup qualification is in football, how naff it is, how football fans would kill for Six Nations, like a rugby Six Nations. So you can't be diluting it with, you know, extra rules and relegation and promotion and different teams and smashing up the historic matchups. What you can do is you can make an equal competition next door to it, which will be just as lucrative eventually.
Well, so the equal competition
won't be just as lucrative. Don't give me that.
Why? You've got Germany in there. You've got Italy in there. It's going to take time, but it could be.
I think you need to bring it all under one structure, like Tim said, and whether you have it as pools of five or pools of six, whatever it is, I'm a bit indifferent about that, but I am all for having it all under one structure and televising all the games, but then giving every nation a share of that television money. It doesn't necessarily need to be an equal share, but it needs to be a share of that overall television.
I don't think money is not the big thing here, because there's quite a lot of money. And also, don't forget...
I don't know how much money there is at this level below.
No. But there's a lot of funding going in from World Rugby to Tier 2s now. Not a huge amount, but a lot. Then they're not being left on their own. So, it's already happening.
Yeah, mate, but there's no professional domestic structures in these places. There's no infrastructure. I know it's small steps, but I would want a disproportionate amount to go lower down and be spread around. It will benefit everyone in the long term. If you want to talk about the long term, you could go, yeah, well, let's see if Belgium and Germany can slowly grow themselves up. Or you could actually...
Well, because Belgium and Team Germany can, because you can find 15 players that can play at a relatively good level who will be German qualified. That's not a problem. You wouldn't be able just to throw some money at the German club structure and have a fully professional league. That's got to be organic.
No, I'm not suggesting you do, but you could, you could have one team that is in a lower French league or a Pro 12B or whatever it would be.
Yeah,
I don't know, but it's got to be more thought out and a much longer term approach thought about. I agree with you on the long term, but I don't agree with you on the long term of I'll just let them play each other and see if they can get better.
Pro 12B might be interesting.
I think that
one team from Belgium, two or three from Germany. Couple from Romania, couple from Georgia, couple from Russia.
Exactly, but they've got to...
And they can aspire to be up if they earn the right there.
Yeah, and you know, well, if these teams are good enough, it will eventually sort itself out. Internationally, they are definitely going in the right direction. Definitely. You just need to watch this game and you think, oh, yeah, these look like professional players, even though they're probably not, but they look like professional players playing at a high standard.
Italy, Ireland. Roars on Twitter, long-time listener, said, "Is CJ Stander Parise with hair?"
Wow.
I would say on that one, both outstanding talismanic figures in the back row, and both have equal amounts of Irish heritage.
Very good.
I would say no, for the simple reason that. Parise's hands are truly exceptional.
And his kicking is pretty good.
His kicking's okay.
his kicking's good.
CJ Stander got an assist from a kick at the weekend.
Did he?
It was a terrible kick. It was like an unusual half crossfield, half bomb that the Italian defenders didn't want to deal with, and Gilroy just picked up and went 40 yards. But no, the difference is Parise's hands. And Ireland have the handling in their back row because they've got Heaslip in there. CJ Standard doesn't give that the same level of handling skill.
No, you're probably right there. Is there anything you can
take? One little fact. Go on, Jay.
I was going to say, is there anything you can take from this game that, well, anything you've learned from this Ireland game which we didn't know about Ireland prior to it?
No. No.
Agreed.
Niall Scannell's a competent hooker.
Yeah, we knew he's kind of competent.
Yeah, we knew that.
Yeah.
He's in his squad. He'd have to be. There was one thing that a tweet we got sent made me chuckle. So it was a link to an article which says, CJ Stander becomes the first Irish forward to score a hat-trick since Keith Wood in 1999. Wow. Which is a little fact for you there. But Rob Hirsch on Twitter said, Cocker, should this, instead of reading Irish forward, read forward who plays for Ireland, hashtag rugby UKIP.
Oh dear.
I'm getting a bit of stick for this. I didn't imagine it would turn out like this.
No, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, Tim.
We didn't. The answer to your question, JB, is no, we didn't learn anything. And
yeah, you're right.
Good.
Ireland are back on the horse, and I think what was smart was not dropping the players who played poorly the previous week, because this was a perfect opportunity to just retain their confidence and let them show it was just a blip.
Yeah,
perfect game to follow that Scottish one.
I tend to agree with you. Well, you said you didn't learn anything about Ireland. Would you like to know or learn something about many other clubs?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Well, I've come up with a new little feature called the Rugby Elevator, where I basically, because we've had loads of requests recently about can you help plug this, can you help plug that, I thought, I might actually make it into a proper kind of section. So if you've got any requests, if you want us to publicise anything to do with your club, let us know. We'll read it out now. And this is the Rugby Elevator, where we go and visit different levels in rugby. Do you like that?
We descend through the different levels in rugby.
Yes.
Genius, JB. That is genius.
It does strike me as a little patronising, but I like it.
Yeah. So if you want to just come in a bit closer, jump into the elevator.
Squeeze in tight. Pull my finger, Phil.
You'll notice I've got my elevator music.
Very nice.
So here we go then. These are some events going on in rugby clubs near you. On 5th of March, Aylesbury Rugby Club are inviting the French under-18s to play England under-18s. North Dorset Sevens has...
Hold on. So sorry. When you say... You made it sound like they've just... Aylesbury Rugby Club have just sorted this fixture out themselves. They've just said, I'll tell you what, France, do you want to send a team? We'll cobble together some English clubs. I assume this is like a proper Six Nations match.
I assume it's something to do with Six Nations, but it's held by Aylesbury, who are doing a big event out of the whole thing, so why not?
Good job, Aylesbury.
There you go.
Yeah.
Can I turn my music back on, though?
Yes, please.
There you go.
You can keep your music on as much as you want.
It's catchy, isn't it? North Dorset Sevens are raising 5k for the Cardiac Charity Cry. That will be given to them as it's their fifth anniversary. England 20s are playing at Modon Park on the 24th of February. Watford RFC have got a junior and minis introduction weekend. That's 25th of February. Stafford are getting a new clubhouse. And my personal favourite is the Gazelles ladies team lunch is in Guildford Rugby Club on the 19th of February. And these girls look quite good. I think they've won the last couple of leagues that they've been in. So there you go. That is some things going on in rugby clubs near you. So if you're around a rugby club, go and visit one.
My experience of women's rugby teams is that they
could put fellas
to shame with the stories they could tell after nights out.
Oh, I've got a cracking one about women. I'll just turn off the elevator music. Yeah, I've got a cracking one about crew in Nantwich.
Women's rugby team?
Yeah.
Is it one that you can tell on the podcast?
Yeah, I think it is, actually.
Okay.
We were playing crew in Nantwich, and we were chatting to the lads afterwards in the showers, and one of them said that there was a mixed tournament at crew in Nantwich, a mixed sevens tournament, and as they were like soaping up, he was saying, oh yeah, and all the lads were being dead rowdy, going, yeah, and we'll go, you know, drink some lager, lads, 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 so on and so forth. And then the women's rugby team walked in and they became incredibly shy and all skulked off. Banter stopped.
In that same sort of area, Crewe and Nantwich, I'm sure there was a story about a former captain of Sandbach as well.
Oh, yeah, that's incredible, isn't it? Yeah, I know all about that. It's a Sandbach. No, Lim. The Lim hooker. If you don't know what I'm talking about, what is the programme, Tim?
Oh, I can't remember what it was called.
It's like Rugby Lads Uncovered or something.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you any more about this because I don't. You can work it out. If you really want to find out the guy, you can work it out. But
what could we say that's a bit of a hint? So it went undercover and just did a documentary on this rugby team, and one of the guys in particular turns out he was a filmmaker.
Yeah, filmmaker. I played against the guy. Good, really good hooker, actually.
A filmmaker in the same manner as which James Haskell.
And he also played Jones. Hooker, JB.
Yes, he did. Paul Doran Jones. Yes, that's kind of
that kind of
film.
That
yeah,
kind of filmmaking. Kind of film. Haskell and Paul Doran Jones.
Yeah, it's on a YouTube documentary somewhere. So go and look at that.
Safe so search on.
We've gone. Well, that's good, isn't it? We tried to do a nice section about community rugby, like Minnie's weekend. And it ends up being about filmmaking in the world. Brilliant. We'll rework this one for next week.
It's first time round. You can't get it right straight away.
Exactly.
I'll be back in 1 minute. You guys carry on.
We're done here, mate.
We've got... Oh, no, because there's no games next week to talk about. We'll do that next week.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Of course.
All that's left to do now is tell you that on Tuesday night, we're going to be recording the Midweek Domestic Podcast. We're going to talk about all things Sail Sharks, and that's about it. And we will catch you there. So be waiting. It will be downloading onto your device Wednesday morning. Is that right, chaps?
That is correct.
If you subscribe, just hit that little subscribe button, and then you will be, yeah.
Exactly right, mate. Exactly right.
That'll okay. Work.
All right, well, until Wednesday, let the boys play, and I'll see you then.
Thank you,
let the boys play.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.